Welcome to the Attraction Pros Podcast, where professionals in the attractions business can get tips, tools, and even a bit of inspiration.
Join us as we tackle some of the most important topics facing the attractions industry today and gain insights from some of the top leaders, creators, and influencers from the exciting world of theme parks, zoos, museums, aquariums, and family entertainment centers.
Because this show is created by attraction pros for attraction pros. I am Josh Liebman, Director of Business Development for Amusement Advantage. I help attractions understand and improve their guest experience.
And I'm Matt Heller, founder of Performance Optimist Consulting. I help leaders lead and work with attractions to increase employee engagement and retention.
Now sit upright, hold on tight, and enjoy the leading resource for attractions industry professionals, the Attraction Pros Podcast.
Hey, Matt, how are you?
I am great. I'm sitting in an Uber in Las Vegas. What are you doing? What?
That's such a coincidence. I'm also sitting in an Uber in Las Vegas. How did you end up in this scenario?
Well, I'm here for Bowl Expo, and I just completed a session. Very excited about that. And now we are heading to the Fremont Street Experience.
We sure are. And you know what? I was sitting in that session, and I got to say, I am very impressed with your Seinfeld-themed ringtone.
Thank you.
On your phone.
Thank you.
Yes.
Did you not know that that was my ringtone?
I've never heard your phone ring before.
I did not know. Okay. Yeah. Well, yes, that was part of my shtick. Actually, you called me. So really, it's your fault that my phone rang.
You told me to call you.
That's true.
It's your fault.
That's true. So, you know, I pretended that the phone rang. Well, the phone did ring, but the premise was that I had to take the call, and I threw somebody up on stage to for them to take over and
Sherry. You know,
yes, and to see if they could take over, and she could not.
But it wasn't her fault.
That was not her fault.
That was the point of the story.
Exactly.
I actually thought it was a really quick way to get a really good lesson in about training new leaders or promoting new employees to leadership, and are you actually giving them the tools and the proper training to do their jobs, or are you literally saying, here's the keys and the radio and the clipboard,
yeah,
and see you later.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I know that's what happened to me. Is that kind of how you kind of learned leadership?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, my first leadership role was actually... it was with a new park that was opening, so like kind of everyone was sort of all in it together, but a lot of my peers had also had a lot of leadership experience leading into it, and you know, some people knew what they were doing a little bit more than I did, but I thought that they were actually really good about kind of taking me under their wing, even though we were peers, and even, you know, my superiors did a really good job with that as well. Of just, you know, making sure that it wasn't just, you know, here's the keys and radio and go. Although I will say there are many times when it felt that way. Sometimes it can feel very, very lonely when you're the one in charge.
Right.
And you don't necessarily know who to go to, but you need to look like you know all the answers. And I remember that being a weird shift when people were coming to me with questions, and I wanted to be like, why are you asking me? But then realized, oh, wait.
You're in charge.
I know this, supposedly.
Right. Yeah.
Right. I'm wearing the color uniform that says I know this.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And certainly I don't want to disparage, you know, my previous employers where this happened. I think it's been kind of a cyclical thing where that's kind of how they learned, and they were kind of thrown into the deep end, and that's how they were now training their team members. And that's kind of part of my quest is to you know, change that cycle.
Mm-hmm.
To show people that there is a different way. There's, you know, low cost, very high effective, and you know, not things that don't take a lot of time or resources, but can get you a much better result than just throwing somebody in the deep end.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, there was one example or one of the topics you were talking about in your session that jogged my memory or took me down memory lane a little bit. And I had this funny memory come to mind. You were talking about how, you know, when employees get promoted, they're now in charge of not just, you know, their subordinates, but in many cases their friends.
Yes.
People who, you know, they became you know, more social with, and now, you know, now they can't necessarily do that anymore. And, you know, in that same role that I was talking about in my first leadership role, my roommate was my supervisor. Mm. And we knew that going into that, we moved to the, to the city for the summer, to that city for the summer to, to take that job. And, we both knew we were in different levels of leadership. We didn't know until we got there that we were in the same line, that he was, I was reporting directly to him. And, we were like 20 and 21 at the time. So it could have gone a couple of different ways. And I know that he and I both look back on that time saying that we walked that line really well. And I used to tell people it was really funny that he could walk up to my ride and he could be like, Josh, come here. This needs to be cleaned. Mm-hmm. This needs to be cleaned. This needs to be cleaned. And it needs to be done right now. And he could walk off the platform. And then later that same day, I could be at home and he could walk in and I could say, hey, this needs to be cleaned. This needs to be cleaned. This needs to be cleaned. And it needs to be done right now. And then walk out of the living room, or something like that. And we had that good balance that, not only, was he my supervisor and we were friends, but we also knew where the line in the sand was. Mm-hmm. And we knew that we could keep work at work and we could, keep home at home. And we did a good job of, of balancing that well. But that example, brought me back to that memory.
Well, I'm glad we could take it down memory lane for a little bit. It's funny because there was a gentleman that came up after the session who was kind of dealing with that same thing, and he said, I just want people to have a smooth day, and I want to be there to help them. And I think what his ultimate kind of struggle was that he wasn't able to talk to people in a way that showed that he had the authority and that he commanded the respect of them. And I think he was still trying to be their leader while still being their friend. And he admitted that he was very, very new to leadership. And I think that's just something he's got to learn. And, a lot of experiences will help him get through that. But, for him to, want to provide a great experience for people is great. And I kept asking him, what do you need from them? What do they need from you? And trying to get him to think about things now on a different relational level, because things are different. When you are taking on a leadership role, things are very different. So it was interesting to talk to him about that.
Yeah, and it really is a tightrope between, I don't want to be their friend, but I also don't want to be overpowering. And I want them to like me, and I want them to respect me, mm-hmm. but I don't want them to fear me. Unless it's in a situation where they should. So there's a lot of balls in the air.
There are.
I
don't know if that's a tightrope. There's got to be, because you mentioned a whole bunch of things, right?
Yeah.
That you've got to balance. And maybe it's the tightrope with the
unicycling, juggling flaming torches.
Exactly.
Right. There we go.
Or axes or something.
Yes,
axes. Flaming axes.
Right.
That you're juggling. So, so cool. So I've never been to the Fremont Street Experience.
Okay. I have once. I don't remember partaking in anything specifically. It was more there just to see it. I think maybe I had dinner down this way. I can see it off in the distance. I see the D.
Okay.
Actually, which I see advertisements for that when I'm in Detroit a lot for this specific D. I think the D might stand for Detroit? I don't know. I could be completely wrong, but I know that
we'll find out when we get there.
I know we're getting close.
Okay.
And the reason they call it the experience is because it really is this very nicely contained, and I want to say very immersive environment. The lights are beautiful. The zip line that we're going to be doing goes right over basically this like pedestrian mall, mm-hmm. almost, lined with restaurants and shops and also the, the casinos and entertainment that this wonderful city has to offer and whatnot. So we're going to get a good bird's eye view of all of that.
Yeah. And yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, but this is sort of downtown Las Vegas or the old downtown, or what is the...
I don't know.
Because I know people think about the Strip. When they think about Vegas a lot of times, but one of the maps I looked at, I thought said downtown in this area.
I think we could actually phone a friend here. Is this where we're going? Is it downtown? Okay.
It's considered downtown.
All right. It is indeed downtown. Great. Great. We have an audience of one right now on the podcast.
Very exciting.
Wait, what is this right here to the this right? One? Yeah.
Yeah, something like a look at art.
It's just a piece of art?
Yeah, something of art, okay. stadium or something like that, right? But this, okay, it's a clinic.
A clinic?
Clinic.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
a okay.
building.
It looks like it looked like a mangled film strip from the back. This is a very aesthetic, very architecturally significant building that we're looking at right now. I guess it's probably the best way to say that. Which of course there are no shortage of that in this city.
No, and it's right across from World Market Center.
Yeah,
is it part of that?
No.
It's separate. Okay.
It's separate. Yeah.
Okay.
This one is wholesale furniture shows.
Furniture shows.
Twice a year.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Great.
Before Donald Trump, president,
yeah. Uh-huh.
He came here each year.
Okay. Before Donald Trump was president, he came here each year. So now he comes here every month?
Oh, okay.
Every couple of weeks?
He's always
there a
here
golf
doing
course
something?
By there? Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
You know, but anyway, before we... You know, before we get there and before we jump on this zip line, which I'm really excited to do, Slotzilla.
Yeah. And we're doing the upper version where you fly like Superman.
Yeah. We're doing the, there's like a fun and a funner one. And I was like, well, we got to do the funner one.
Absolutely.
Because that's a word. But anyway, Matt, what are your thoughts if you get to a hotel earlier than the designated check-in time? I've always seen it as like kind of a nice perk when the room is available and I can get to the room early. And, you know, I feel like most hotels do a good job of getting housekeeping in there and doing the rooms that need to be turned over first versus the ones that just need to be cleaned for multi-night stays. But for a hotel to charge an additional fee for someone to check in early, not as a pre-planned event, but if they just happen to arrive early and the room is already ready, do you think it's okay for a hotel to charge, say, hypothetically, a $20 fee to do that?
Well, I'm curious where you got that particular figure.
Oh, I just made up that whole scenario in my head.
You did, yes. Yeah. Well, no, I'm of the opinion that no, it's not okay if that room is already ready to go and you are. Okay. Just going to jump in a little early, then no.
And the free money.
So no, I don't think that a hotel should charge an extra $20 just to check in early. And you know what's interesting? What I've kind of found here in Las Vegas specifically, you know, you and I traveled to a lot of different places and even, you know, stay in a lot of hotels. But here, more than any place, I find there's extra service fees.
Right.
You know, and maybe it's because of the typical clientele or, you know, the people that they're supposedly serving. But to me, you know, to pay for that extra $20 or even something as simple as internet, which even you go to a Fairfield Inn or a Spring Hill Suites, internet's included.
It's all included. Right.
But now we're at a quote-unquote higher-end hotel and we have to pay extra for the internet.
Yeah. You know what this reminds me of, actually? Do you remember when IAPA was here in Vegas back in 2009, I went to an education session with a panel that you were on, along with Dave Spencer from SeaWorld.
Yes.
And two folks from here in Las Vegas, and I regret that I don't remember their names. And the session was on the difference in operating models between Las Vegas and Orlando.
I do remember that.
And my biggest takeaway from that actually had to do with specifically what we're talking about right now. That the model in Orlando is you want for people to pay for as much upfront in a large package as possible so that when they get there, they feel that their pockets are empty for the ancillary types of expenses like the retail, additional food and beverage, mainly souvenirs, basically. But for Vegas, the model was just get them here, and while they're here, get them to spend as much money. And it worked out, you know, it kind of evens out in the end, but it's just that different model that, you know, flights tend to be a little bit cheaper coming into Vegas. You know, the hotel rates tend to be cheaper, but yeah, I'm going to pay $20 if You know, if I take an early flight from Chicago, I had an 8 a.m. flight from Chicago, which meant I landed at 10 a.m. Pacific time here and got to the hotel by 10:30, and they told me it was going to be $20 for me to check in early. Now, I don't care if it's Vegas or Orlando or wherever. If I am at the hotel, if I just happen to be there, and you happen to have my room, and it's clean, and it's empty, and this wasn't discussed ahead of time, you guys just went ahead and cleaned the room.
As they
100% did normally, I think that I should be able to have access to that room. So, you know, pulling back from that and looking at it from a really broad perspective, I guess that, you know, my question then is, you know, are you charging for something that is only frustrating your guests, that if you were to give that to them just as an amenity, whatever it is, whatever type of attraction, you know, you're working with, whatever type of experience we're talking about, or something that you might already be charging for, is it something that you could improve the overall perception of the experience if you just gave it to them? And you told them that maybe you told them that normally this is something, you know, that you charge for, or that your competitors charge for, and that, you know, you're waiving that because, you know, you appreciate their business. And particularly in this case, the hotel should appreciate the fact that I got there earlier than expected, because if I don't show up till 4 o'clock, I can't start spending money till 4 o'clock.
And especially here in Vegas, that could mean slot machines,
right,
and gambling, and there's plenty of ways to spend money here.
Exactly.
First of all, I have to commend you for remembering that.
I had
actually forgotten about that session until you just mentioned it. Because I did a couple of sessions with Dave Spencer from at the time SeaWorld.
Yeah.
And the folks were from, I want to say, Harrah's here in here in Las Vegas, and we had some HR folks. So I applaud you for remembering that and actually
totally
remembering that takeaway.
Yeah, yeah. I remember a lot from that trip. That was my third IAPA Expo at the time, but that was my first trip to Vegas. And so I made sure to divide my time between the expo as well as being able to do some self-exploration as well.
In Las Vegas.
In Las Vegas.
Well, and you bring up a good point about the packaging it up front, or spend it when you get here and you've got, you know, sort of, I'm going to call it the nickel and dime effect.
Yes.
Because that's how I feel. Now, I don't come to Las Vegas often. I only typically come here when there's a conference here and there's a reason for me to come here, professional reason for me to come here. So when I have, you know, an extra charge that is the internet, or there's this charge here, that charge there, to me, again, it kind of gets into the nickel and dime. And I would rather have that all included, and then it doesn't become a frustration for me,
right,
as a guest.
Exactly, exactly. And then it really sours your impression over it. You know, I don't remember if we talked about it on a podcast a few months ago, but I was at Atlantis in the Bahamas last year, and it was a similar type of experience. They charged me for bell services that I was never even offered. You know, I get my bill and I see $15 for, you know, bell services at check-in. I thought, wow, I would have loved to have had that, because I think my room was over a mile away from the front desk.
Right.
You know, and same thing just with resort fees. And then, you know, internet, I feel like a lot of people expect to pay for that now, but it's always really nice when, you know, when hotels just say, we're giving you internet for free.
Here's your Wi-Fi code.
Yeah.
You know.
Here's your Wi-Fi.
Well, as we were tweeting about this earlier,
anger tweeting. Sense the
just between the two of
the
us.
Frustration.
So it could have been a text, but no, we had to tweet it. There was somebody else, the Kill the Resort Fee.
Oh, I brought him into the conversation.
Yes.
I said, I know you've got some thoughts on this, Kill Resort Fees.
Well, and what I had brought up is, and where I'm staying, there was a thing when I went to sign on to the internet that said, you know, this, if you have paid the resort fee, your internet is included in that, so go ahead and sign up like you're going to pay, but that charge will never show up on your bill.
Which then prompted my question to you of, did you pay that resort fee, or were you given an option?
I may have been given an option. I signed in completely on the kiosk, but I also did not book the room. It was booked for me through Bowl Expo because I was coming out here for business. So I didn't actually book that room. It's entirely possible that I may have said yes on the kiosk screen, to pay for that, fee. But I guess my point is that now there's that one more thing that I've got to think about.
Right.
You know, whether I paid for it or not, and then, you know, signing into the internet. I don't know if I paid that resort fee or not, so I'm just going to go ahead and sign in and see what happens. It's not one of those things where I want to call the front desk and try to get to the bottom of it. It's just not a priority for me at that time, so it just becomes something that I kind of question, and I'm not really sure what actually happened until I see my bill later.
Right, and you know, I mean, if we're on the subject of resort fees, get rid of them.
Kill them.
There is no benefit to having a resort fee, despite how nicely you can package it and make it look good. The reason for a resort fee is so hotels can pay less franchise fees if they're part of less, you know, if they're part of the franchise because it's not part of the room rate, and that they don't have to display that on third-party sites like Expedia or hotels.com or, you know, a third-party site that takes a portion of the revenue, because that's, you know, it's an added revenue that's not part of the room rate. But it is, because it's not optional. So if a $250 room plus a $35 resort fee, just call it $285.
Yeah.
And just say it's all included.
And the Kill the Resort Fee tweeted that somebody had said that was illegal to actually put internet within the resort fee. And I didn't get to read the whole article that he attached, but somebody was really challenging the hotel for charging all these fees and internet was one of them.
Right.
And I should go back and reread that so I can speak more intelligently about it.
Absolutely. And you know, to whoever is running that Kill the Resort Fees account, thank you for being the silent hero that we all need.
That's right.
Yeah.
So speaking of a hero and a superhero, we're going to go...
Good segue.
Thank you. We're going to go on the Slotzilla in the Superman position. You've heard the music now for a couple of minutes. We are standing in the Fremont Street experience, which there's if you've never been here, there's sort of a cover over this entire walkway, this street area, which I've seen pictures. This is where the lights come on, and it becomes quite a spectacle. It's still daylight right now, so there's not as much intensity of the lights of the neon. But I look forward to seeing that here in a couple of hours. Actually, here comes
somebody right now
on the zip line.
Oh, did you guys see? Oh, wasn't that great?
Yeah.
Oh, there's somebody else.
Yep.
And someone else. I look forward to seeing how this braking system works.
Yeah, and now they're kind of going backwards and going forward. This will be interesting. Oh. This will be really interesting.
This looks very interesting.
Should we head over there and see what that's all about?
Let's head over there, and then let's give our listeners another update as we're closer.
All right, here we go.
All right.
All right. So you just broke a sign, but we also, we also just did the... What is it? Fear of the Walking Dead survival.
We just took a little detour. We were planning to immediately come up and do the Slotzilla zipline, and then realized we were running a little early, and then saw that Fear of the Walking Dead survival was right next to us. And you know what's great, Matt, is very recently you and I have been talking about like the best combinations of types of attractions and like kind of this cross-pollination. And what we just experienced was like almost like the Triple Crown, essentially. We just went through a haunted house escape room dark ride.
Shoot 'em up dark ride.
Yeah, Tri-O-Tech Entertainment dark ride.
Yeah, which was cool.
And scary, I'm not gonna lie. I normally go through haunted houses being like, oh yes, I want to like appreciate all of like the artistic elements that went into this, which I did. I made sure to immerse myself in that. But at the same time, like, I had some, like, nearly poop my pants moments there.
I definitely felt the anticipation. I felt the fear. What I thought was really cool was how the actors did such a good job of moving you through the experience in the theme.
It's very controlled.
Very controlled.
And, you know, speaking of the actors with the theme, the way that they did the safety instructions was also, like, I was picking up on it's like, oh, I know this spiel, but they were also, like, drill sergeants. So it's like, you will not touch them and they will not touch you. Do you understand? We're yes, I do. Like, and there's my, like, verbal acknowledgement.
There was even the out. Like, if you feel like you're not, you don't want to go any further, there's cameras like that. Put your hand up and they will come get you and get you out. So,
do you understand?
Yes. Right. So I thought the acting was very good, and it made me feel more comfortable when they said, you shouldn't touch anybody, but nobody's going to touch you either.
I was going to ask, because I've been through haunted houses where they do touch you, and it was fine. I loved every minute of it, but like I sort of needed to know that going into it.
Right, you need to know the expectation.
And that was a Saw-themed haunted house at Thorpe Park. And I don't know if they actually can touch you or if they just knew who I was, because I was there for work. I was, you know, so like some of the staff members knew that like I wasn't just a regular guest.
Okay. Oh, 8 o'clock?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, okay, we'll be up in a couple of minutes.
Okay. Cool.
All right.
Okay.
All right, so that might be our cue to cut this a little short. But we will report back from the top of Slotzilla. But Fear the Walking Dead, survival, amazing, immersive entertainment experience.
Very cool.
Go do it if
it's
you're
only
in
20
Vegas.
Minutes. It doesn't take very long.
Right, exactly.
Very cool.
Yep. And we're back.
We are now walking up the stairs to the Slotzilla experience.
Yeah.
And we're noticing that this Fremont Street area, there's a lot of things that really remind me of iconic Las Vegas. Mm. You know, the Golden Nugget and a lot of the neon and things like that. So, in fact, there was one facade, I guess, from the Pioneer Casino that I remember.
The Cowboy.
From when I was like 10 years old and I was here with my parents. And I remember seeing that. So we get to see all that from a bird's eye view as we go on Slotzilla.
I look forward to doing that. All right, that was fun.
That was awesome.
I feel exhilarated.
We just did Slotzilla.
That's right.
And
we just jumped out of a giant slot machine.
We just did, and I got to live my dream of being Superman. Arms out, the whole thing. It was awesome.
Did you have your arms out the whole
time? Well, okay, not the whole time. I did for the beginning part, and then I thought, you know what? Sometimes Superman puts his arms back to his sides. And so I did that, and I actually went faster.
That's good. How fast do you think you went?
I think the ad says 35 miles an hour. But
do you think that everyone goes at that speed?
Probably not. I think if you have a little more heft, you might go a little faster.
Mm, gotcha.
The gentleman next to me was ahead of me, and then when I put my arms to my side and I became more aerodynamic, I overtook him.
Okay.
And he wondered how
I did
that.
I think that's what it comes down to. It comes down to you have to know your own personal aerodynamics. And sometimes it can take you a little bit to get into that groove.
To like figure that out.
The guy next to me, he just zipped right past me, and I was like, how is he going so much faster, and he's so much farther ahead of me? He's not, you know, we're not of substantially different body types, but then it's totally about the aerodynamics. But,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, and we got to go through it at a really good time because the sun had gone down.
Just gone down. That was
a
worry
that
we had,
actually. Cool lights.
It was like, oh, if we do this at 8 o'clock, the sun might still be up. It was still very much bright out when we arrived. So it's a good thing we did that whole Fear of the Walking Dead survival. Yeah.
Survival, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun, too.
It was.
So would you do Slotzilla again?
I would absolutely do Slotzilla again. You know, one thing that I pointed out to you is that it didn't appear that they had a combo ticket for the two different types of options that they have. So there's the entry-level Slotzilla, where you're sitting upright, and then the one that we did. I'm sure these have official names that I'm completely
one is
blanking
Zoom
on right now.
Line, and I think Zip Line.
Okay.
I think the one we did was Zoom Line.
Okay.
Because it said that on my wristband.
Okay, well, it didn't appear to be that there was, like, a Zoom and Zip combo.
Right.
Which I feel like could possibly be a good revenue-generating opportunity for people who are just like, well, I just want the full experience. But also, it really seemed that, I pointed out to you, I'm like, you know what? Maybe they built this smaller one to sell more of the bigger one. Because it's like, well, if you have the option of the two, it's kind of like a go big or go home type of thing.
Right, right.
I'm really glad we did the higher one. It cost a little more, but I think it was worth it.
Totally. You know, well, it's if you don't know about this attraction, it's longer.
Yeah.
And it's higher. They say it's about, it starts at about 114 feet high.
I didn't feel that high, but I guess, I have no room to argue.
I guess not.
Yeah.
I guess not.
If that's what they told me.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So one of the things that we kind of discussed while we were up there too was that the operator that was on the microphone was getting away with a lot of things that
totally.
I think places that you know are not in Las Vegas might not get away with.
Right. I completely agree, and I thought it was really entertaining. You know, one of the things that I remember as a ride operator is that if you've got one empty seat to fill, you need to start looking for people who are single riders.
Right.
And you know, I've told you before, you know, what I used to do, you know, I'd walk, you know, through the queue, you know, up by the station. And when I remember at Millennium Force, I would specifically say, do we have any single riders out there? Anybody that's all alone in the world and doesn't have anyone to, you know, to ride Millennium Force with? Is there anybody that just doesn't have anyone, you know? And people would laugh. Eventually someone would raise their hand and be like, hey, that's me. They'd come forward. And, you know, this, you know, one of the ride operators who was doing a similar thing, you know, is anybody here all alone? And then he moved to, okay, well, is there anybody here who just doesn't like the people they're with and, you know, kind of want to ditch them, which is one that I've used as well.
Yeah.
And then he really pulled out one that I think you can only get away with in Vegas. And he said, well, is there anyone here who brought a 10 with them, but the alcohol's starting to wear off?
And now you think there are five?
Right, yeah. So you need to bolt a little bit.
Switch your partners.
Yeah, and you know, whether that got somebody or not, it was entertaining. And it was all, I mean, from an operation standpoint, it was all towards the goal of efficiency.
Yeah.
Which, as a consumer, I loved it. And
yeah.
Also, I was entertained. I thought it was very funny.
I also thought he did a great job when he was on the microphone, you know, before the 3-2-1, you know, letting people go. You know, he would say different things like, hey, by the way, just so you know, this is all of our first day.
All of our first day.
And so we all have the same amount of information.
Right, as it then drops out and then the cable, you know, loosens up. And
exactly.
There's another one he said, well, in the case of an emergency, stop, drop, and roll.
Right.
Or at least I think that's how it goes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then he would joke specifically with different people, you know, about their flight. And so he just did a really great job, I thought, of personalizing the experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to use that exact same phrase. Thank you for stealing that.
Hey, you're welcome.
Yeah. You know, I always talk about, you know, what's the best way to personalize the experience. And, you know, you have your script, but is the script a verbatim script, or is it, you know, these are the concepts that you need to communicate with your guests. And he was doing all of that. He was, you know, communicating everything safety related. There was nothing compromised from that standpoint. But at the same time, they clearly were having a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. While they were up there, you know, I mean, you know, we were watching them and, you know, they were 100% diligent with making sure that, you know, these carabiners were clicking in exactly, you know, where they needed to go, that, you know, everyone was, you know, hitting their green button when, you know, when they were fully ready. It was all, you know, with safety as the priority, but with their personality and flair infused into it. And the cool thing about it, too, is that, you know, we were up there for a little while, but it's not like we were up there for that long. So they could use another thing that, and they probably do, concept that I talk about, which is redundant enthusiasm.
That could have been
his 10th time saying, this is all of our first day.
Right.
You know, or it could have been, you know, he could have said that, you know, 40 times last week, you know, and it's still just as funny because the guests have all cycled through. They're all new. They're all different. It's brand new for them. So make it feel like it's brand new for you. That's, you know, one of the most important things with just creating a more memorable guest experience, right? And I mean, we can sit here, we can talk about all day about what the actual zipline experience was, but if you've noticed, we quickly gravitated to the operators who were taking care of us and who were really actually providing and delivering that experience.
Absolutely. And what I thought was really cool is we were up there, when we got to the platform where we were about to load, we sat through, what, 3 or 4 at least cycles.
Oh yeah,
you know,
it is a low capacity attraction.
Getting people hooked
as expected,
and on their way, and he did not repeat himself while we were up there.
Nope.
Which was great because that became part of the experience and part of the show.
What's he gonna say next?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And even when I was in the prone position getting ready to go, one of the operators came up to me, and they were having sort of a discussion back and forth about the terminology. You know, is this a gate? Is this a fence? Is this a queue? And it was just funny. The guy says, hey, you know, he kind of taps me on the shoulder. He says, what would you call this? And I said, well, I would call that a fence. And he's like, now, what would you call that thing up there? And I said, well, I would call that a gate. And I can't remember which one, you know, I actually agreed with. But they were all about, you know, having fun and involving us in the whole process. And, I you know, even that very quick interaction, you know, made me feel like I was part of the interaction.
And that's so important, too, because what we just did, this was a $48 ticket. This,
right.
I mean, this experience probably actually cost more than a lot of regional amusement parks, or at least, you know, up there, you know, on par.
Yes.
With, you know, with something that could be an entire day's experience. You know, it was definitely way, you know, it cost way more than, you know, a museum, a zoo, aquarium. So they've got a lot riding on them to make sure that...
No pun intended.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, or at least most, you know, zoos, museums, and aquariums. I can think of, you know, a couple off the top of my head that have a little bit of a higher ticket. But, you know, they've got a lot on their shoulders, in addition to the harnesses that right. they're putting on us. You know, but to deliver a $48 experience that... You know, the majority, like 95% of the experience was, you know, I don't even want to say waiting in line, but kind of going through the staging of the experience.
It was
the
anticipation.
Getting harnessed up. Yeah, building up the anticipation. And, you know, it's really important to, you know, to give that full experience. And I'm very appreciative that they did.
I am too. And I think that was a very successful with the Walking Dead experience and the mm-hmm. Slotzilla. Very successful Attraction Pros outing.
I would say Attraction Pros take Las Vegas. What are we going to do next? We've done Chicago. We've done Las Vegas. We've done Attraction Pros Live in Naples, Florida.
Right. I think we're going to have to think about what's going to come next.
I think we've set the bar pretty high for ourselves.
I think we have. Well, so you want to do your famous closing?
I guess that's where we're at. So, Matt, this was a really fun several hours here of... the Fremont Street Experience, Walking Dead, or Fear of the Walking Dead, Survival, Haunted House, Escape Room, and Dark Ride, and then the awesome Slotzilla Zipline. I had a great time. I hope you guys had just as great of a time as well. So for all of you out there listening, thanks for being Attraction Pros.
Thanks for joining us for another great episode of the Attraction Pros Podcast.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and we'd love to hear your feedback. Feel free to drop us a line on Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn, and make sure to follow us on all the social channels.
And make sure you've subscribed to the show so you can get the latest episodes every single week. Also, if you're new to the show, be sure to check out all the great episodes and guests we've featured in the past.
And if you want to learn more about Matt and Josh and check out the best articles for you to operate your attraction most successfully, be sure to visit us at attractionpros.com.